Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We're exploring the edges of our Dynasty rankings. Dave and I put RotoViz Dynasty tier rankings to the test. Which players are above or below the line of a future round one Dynasty pick? All that and more on RotoViz Radio.
What's up, RotoViz?
Got a little long with that intro there, Dave. I almost lost my train of thought.
You're making some picks here, or what's going on?
And welcome into the RotoViz Fantasy Football Podcast. It's Curtis and Dave. We're going to have some fun with the RotoViz Dynasty tier ranking system in this episode. We were talking in pre-production here just about different show topics that we want to try to hit over the next week or two. And I'm really in I've done one dynasty startup this offseason, getting ready to do another. And so as part of that prep, I want to make sure that I have a lot of conviction in where the tiers are, because that's how you manipulate the board. That's how you make trades and startups, figure out which spots you really want to be in and accumulate picks. And I've looked enough at my own rankings. I want to zoom out and look at the composite RotoViz Dynasty tier rankings and just pressure test a little bit with Dave's help here and the help of the NFL Stat Explorer. Is there conviction amongst our team, for a tier one dynasty pick? We equate a tier one dynasty pick to a player that's worth at least three future round ones. So we'll look at the bottom three players that are rated as tier one and the top three players that are rated as tier two, and see if we think that line's in the right spot. I'm not here to debate where Sean and Blair necessarily have their rankings on players. I just want to see if I agree with where the line as a group is getting drawn. And we'll do that for each tier break down through tier four. Why tier four? Because it's nice and clean, because the way that Dave designed our value system, tier four is the last level of player that we equate with the value of a random future round one rookie pick. So we're not going to talk about every player that's in those four tiers, Dave. We're going to explore the edges and set the edge. Should be pretty fun. And it'll be nice because I always enjoy getting your input on specific players for dynasty purposes. We draft a ton of best ball teams together and do all the high stakes redraft stuff together each year. We talk a lot of like dynasty strategy shop, but I don't always get a chance to pick your brain on specific players in dynasty. And I think we'll be able to do that a little bit in this episode too. So let's hit a drop and start exploring. All right. So if you go to rotoviz.com, click on our dynasty rankings tab, what will populate for you is the RotoViz Triflex composite rankings. It's Sean, Blair, and Curtis, my rankings blended together. And the bottom three players in tier one, Dave, that are worth, in our team's eyes, at least three future round ones are Justin Jefferson, Caleb Williams, and Jahmyr Gibbs. Okay. And then the top three from tier two, as I reset here, are Amon-Ra St. Brown, Marvin Harrison, and Breece Hall. So I want to take a look at those six players and see, I'm not even going to debate if those are the right six players, because I have some differing opinions from Sean and Blair on a couple of these players. But I just want to see if we can agree that those six are in a clump, is the line in the right spot? So here's what we can do first. I'm going to read down all six of those players. We're going to forget that I said some of them are in tier one and tier two. And when I get to the point where it seems like that's a tier break, I want you to stop me. Sure. Okay. And then we'll talk about it. So from the top, Justin Jefferson, Caleb Williams, Jahmyr Gibbs.
I think we've hit a stop.
Stop? Okay, we got. Why do we need to stop there?
Well, because to me, right now, if I am putting together a team, the amount of picks that I'm equating to Justin Jefferson are greater than what I am equating to Jahmyr Gibbs. And I can say that without even putting too much thought in it, by enough of a void that I know there has to be a natural tier break there. Now, it's possible that some of the names you go below, in my personal mind, would actually slate up with Jefferson. We'll have to see, but I think there's already a tier break. You do have a really interesting conversation that can start with Caleb Williams and which tier he actually falls into, but we've already found that inflection point.
Okay, so Dave's crying foul already, just two players in with Jahmyr Gibbs. So now we have to figure out, okay, are any of the players that are below Gibbs, would you push them above? Okay, so Amon-Ra St. Brown.
I mean,
above or below Jahmyr Gibbs?
I'd push him above.
Same here. And I have him above. Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, I'd put him above.
Same, have him above. And then Breece Hall.
Yeah, I'd have Hall above Gibbs.
Same, have him above. So what's, you know, and as you can kind of probably deduce here, is we have one of our three rankers is just uber. I mean, I think one of our three rankers has a lot of personal conviction that Jahmyr Gibbs is the next Christian McCaffrey.
Yep.
And if you believe that, you should rate him that high because you'll have him in every league and you will enjoy the riches that he will stack up for you over the next couple of seasons of running back dominance. But if you think Jahmyr Gibbs is very good, but not necessarily all decade level fantasy producer, it doesn't make sense to take him above some of these high end wide receiver one type. So I think Dave and I have, I think it's easiest probably at this point in the episode to draw the line. If we were going to say that Gibbs is the bottom of those six players. Okay. So we could wave our wand and push the composite ranking of Gibbs down so that he was not in tier one. Let's do this exercise again and see where you would draw the line. So now the list, Dave, would be Justin Jefferson, Caleb Williams, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Marvin Harrison, Breece Hall. You haven't stopped me yet. Those guys all in the same tier for you?
Yeah.
So if those guys, this is what's fun about dynasty rankings. If those guys are on the same tier, are those guys all in tier one? Do all those tier two guys need to be bumped up in tier one? Or do we have to go above Jefferson?
Well, wait.
And see if Jefferson is actually.
Sorry. Jefferson was included in that piece. I thought that I was being forced to equate Gibbs with Jefferson and go from there.
Nope. I'm saying now we're going to reread these names.
Okay.
With Gibbs at the tail end, because you and I found alignment that he's the bottom of these six. So stop me when I get to a player who's not as valuable as Jefferson for you.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Caleb Williams. Amon-Ra St. Brown.
I think we've already hit it.
Did we hit it at Caleb Williams?
We hit it at, well, I think we hit it after. I'm really struggling with this one. I'm going to say that we hit it after Caleb Williams.
Okay. So there's
we're
a
basically
line
at the same. Yeah. So basically what we're getting to is my hard stopping point, I think, is after you get to Justin Jefferson. And I will just expound on this for a minute here.
Yeah.
Sure. Some of these players are really exciting, but in a Triflex league like this, I think what we're looking for, Curtis, with the tier one players is they're either an elite quarterback or they are an elite wide receiver or they are a player that is a Christian McCaffrey running back that we, like in our own mind, we can project forward as that type of player, right? Yeah. Towards the beginning of their career. Now, Caleb Williams is the interesting piece where some of my valuation there is factored in just because of all of the hype around him. And there is a little bit of what the market thinks factoring into that. And me also willing to kind of go on a limb and factor in what could be for Caleb Williams, given, just the player that he was in college. So to me, that is a very stringent criterion. I just can't get many players in. Though Amon-Ra St. Brown might be relatively close, he's just not quite close enough. And then with Jahmyr Gibbs, I've already talked on the show about I have concerns about you getting Jahmyr Gibbs like production like you saw last year for multiple years onward, which is why I can't really get him in the conversation of being worth that many round one picks.
So yeah, I'm not going to disagree with any of that thought process there. I think the other thing to do is, since you're drawing that line after just two players, what I like to do when I'm going through, and this is kind of like, you know, behind the curtain stuff, what I like to do when I'm doing my dynasty rankings revisions. Okay, if I think that the tier it actually got bumped up there, I want to go a player or two above Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
And is Jefferson actually, should he actually just be bumped down? Is that the issue?
Sure.
And so what we have above Jefferson, immediately above Jefferson, is CeeDee Lamb and Ja'Marr Chase. So do you feel with J.J. McCarthy there and the changeover in the Minnesota offense, are you good with those guys? And here's how I pressure test that. If you have the 105 in a dynasty startup draft, are you fine basically recouping any extra value that you can get to move down from Justin Jefferson, or would you prefer CeeDee Lamb or Ja'Marr Chase to him?
It's a great question. I think straight up, right, I'm preferring them to him, but would I take Jefferson in a small piece? Probably a decently small piece. Yeah. I would take Jefferson in that as opposed to Lamb and Chase. And we could talk a little bit about why I feel that way. If we feel,
if you're willing to move for basically marginal value, then I think that's fine. And what we're saying is that then you would not feel the same way to bump down from Jefferson to Amon-Ra St. Brown. You would want something a little bit more substantial.
Correct.
Okay. Then the tiers are the composite tiers are in the correct place there. Again,
let me ask you,
we're analyzing the Rotoviz tiers, not right, the Curtis tiers. Right.
But this, I think, because I will say there is a little bit of a hesitation that I have when I'm answering that. But logically, when I think about it, you know, I override any of that feeling that I might have when we start talking about Jefferson and change versus Lamb and Chase. Because I think there is an argument that can be made now that there is some separation between those three players. Where do you land on that?
Well, I've got Jefferson at the tail end as well. I've kept him in that top tier, mostly because that's been my observation of where the community is valuing him. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't actually think I would trade Justin Jefferson away for less than three future first. I mean, part of this actually comes down to, you know, you could almost argue, do we need a tier 0.5? Because I mean, I wouldn't trade Josh Allen
right
for three future first, right? But those guys end up in the same tier because it doesn't make, I mean, you know, the exercise could just go into perpetuity almost, right? Because you're going to find somebody right that would pay some sort of crazy price and no matter what exactly league you're in.
And one of the whole ideas behind this is you can't have things get so granular that like it's hard to put the context on stuff, right? No, so exactly. So you have to have some type of way to break these things down. And it's always a little bit arbitrary, you know, to some degree when you're looking right at the cutoffs between tiers, especially in cases where, you know, you're looking at tiers here like one and two, and you could go out and pull 100 players and, you know, maybe 53 of them have that player in tier one and the balance is in tier two. So, you know, you're kind of splitting hairs on some players.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got your brain picked there. I will go through the order that I have. This is just the sequence, I guess, that I have those players in. It's not the actual number ranking that I have on those players, but of the ones that we just talked about, I do have Jefferson first and then Caleb Williams, then Amon-Ra St. Brown, followed by Marvin Harrison, followed by Breece Hall, and then substantially further down, actually at 22 overall, is where I have Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, but below those guys. So, you know, I think that's a little bit of confirmation for me. I actually have a bunch of other players sandwiched in there that don't necessarily pan out. We've got one thing that I think is so interesting, and it's the value of having a group rankings exercise, is so that you're not, you know, maybe missing something. There's so many players to stay up on and project forward. It's good to have kind of the wisdom of a small crowd that is kind of like-minded and thoroughly thinking through the next 1 to 3 years of NFL when they're doing rankings, and still to see that variation, especially in tier two, is pretty interesting.
Can I interject one thought in there too? which is useful about it, and kind of with how we have a system like this. What I do like is it has us all operating under the mindset so that there's consistency with how you go about doing these rankings. Because I have seen issues in the past where you have a lot of different people coming in. You're just doing rankings. You don't really have anything that's instructing you how to do those rankings, and that can get really hard. And then there's a lot of, you know, kind of inconsistency, and some of the meaning of them is lost. So that's just kind of why I would encourage people, if they're listening, to go in and kind of look at how we have this set up with the tiers, how we have things broken down, and you'll see that there's a lot of useful ways you can cut at these rankings when you see that composite. And then you can also look where each ranker has them. Just a lot of good info there.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, now let's hop down to the tier two, tier three cutoff here, because this one, I mean, I disagree with how this one plays out too, but you know, I'm going to hold my thoughts and see, you know, what Dave thinks. So if I'm going to sort by rank and then see who comes up at the edges of the tier. So the bottom of tier two is
pretty large.
AJ Brown.
Yep.
Xavier Worthy and Jalen Waddle.
Yep.
Okay. And then the top of tier three. Oh, and tier two, by the way, I should say, is we rate that as a player that you would want at least two round one picks for. Okay.
Two round one picks. So, yep.
Two round one picks. So the bottom of tier two is AJ Brown, Xavier Worthy, Jalen Waddle, saying that you would want at least two round one picks for those players. And then the top of tier three is Christian McCaffrey, Tyreek Hill, and Kyle Pitts. So let me read through those guys and let's see where you draw the line, or let's see if you think maybe the whole thing's upside down or if a lot of it's upside down, because this is a tough one. And this is our particular spot in our rankings where we have a little bit of a variation between the teams, between the rankers, baking in presumed 2024 production versus also intermingled with some severe age penalties.
Yeah.
Versus a wait and see methodology on some of the rookies. So there's a lot. This is a really dynamic edge of a tier. So AJ Brown, Xavier Worthy, Jalen Waddle, Christian McCaffrey, Tyreek Hill, Kyle Pitts. So you didn't speak up there.
I didn't.
So I can only assume that you want to jumble it up.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, I think that this is a really tough one, right? Especially we're going back to the picks, right? AJ Brown definitely to me resides in tier two. I you know, think that is completely fair for him. Jalen Waddle, I'm cool with the two picks. Xavier Worthy, it is kind of odd to me to have him already in the same tier as AJ Brown. And that was where I started to kind of question it. And I had to see the rest of the names that were coming up. Now, Tyreek Hill, in my opinion, has a stronger case for being in tier two still than Xavier Worthy does being in it. That was one of the things that stood out to me. I'd like to make a case for Christian McCaffrey, but honestly, if I'm a dynasty manager at this point and I can flip McCaffrey for a first round pick, I think I'm ready to do it. Tyreek Hill, we know he's talked about retirement. I still think you get one more 2 years out of him playing the way that we think he's going to play in that Dolphins offense, and it completely justifies him being in tier two.
And then Kyle Pitts was the last player there. And of course, Triflex rankings are tight end premium.
Yeah. So I would not put Pitts in the same tier as AJ Brown and Tyreek Hill at this point. So he's out. So he's in tier three.
So you would have Pitts in tier three. So you're saying he's where he should be.
Well, I actually might even have to think about that, because I feel like the tier three that's landed on here, and the tier two are larger than if I was personally doing this. So there might be some fallout. But in the kind of construct that we're in now, Pitts, I say at least is appropriately separated.
You got to stick to the game we agreed on for the radio. I mean, we didn't say we're going to go back to the drawing board and blow all of it up.
Yeah, the whole
process. We're going to look at six players, you know, on either side of the tier lines.
We said we were going to play it loose tonight. We said we were going to play it loose.
All right. Not that loose. Okay. Not that loose unless I'm going to pour a cocktail.
Pitts is tier three. McCaffrey is tier three. Worthy's tier three. AJ Brown is tier two. Jalen Waddle is tier two. And Tyreek Hill is tier two out of those six players.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that's fine. That's fine. I would even disagree with that a little bit. I do agree that it's hard to stomach. I mean, Xavier Worthy should be tier three. I mean, I've got him at 56 overall.
Yep.
And the reason that he's up here in tier two is we've got, you know, our other two rankers have him in their top 30. One of them actually in their top 20 overall. And so, you know, while I think that the environment, when we talked about the Chiefs in our last episode, the environment certainly exists for him to pop. And if he pops as a Chief tied to Mahomes, he will absolutely be worth that. I'm just not comfortable projecting it yet because of all the things we talked about in the last episode. And if you missed that, you can go back and listen. I won't rehash that here. Pitts, the same thing. It's kind of like, you know, hey, let's, I still want to be in on him. I really do. You know, we know the talent is there and the athletic prowess is there. And finally he gets the upgraded quarterback, but we still have never really seen it all put together.
We've seen other very talented players put up numbers with bad quarterbacks, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, we're past the excuse making stage and we're kind of at the crux of it all, for Pitts now. I mean, this is the put up or shut up year now. And so I'm fine. I agree with you. I'm fine keeping him down in tier three. For me, you still have to keep McKay. I mean,
okay.
I think, and this is a delineation point in dynasty strategy between, you know, serious dynasty players is how much is a title worth to you? And when you're doing a startup draft or, you know, when you're managing your team in an ongoing fashion, it's like, if any title is worth more roster chaos, managing through roster chaos that is painful, if any title is more valuable than that, I mean, McCaffrey still absolutely has to be a tier two player. You can't trade him, you know, trade him for a random one. Now, I mean, the team that you traded him to for that one is going to have a late pick.
Yeah.
He's going to make the team awesome. So, I mean, to me now, if you could say, okay, I'm going to trade him away and I have the foresight to know he's going to get injured and that team's going to suck and it's going to be the 101. Okay. Yeah. I mean, if we're saying like the future 101, yeah, do that.
Yeah.
But for a random one, and then that team gets to use him this year, that to me, I need more control over what's going on in my 12 team, single league, micro market, whatever you want to call it. So he's a tier two for me. Tyreek Hill is absolutely a tier two. I'm frustrated that he's below that line. Both of those players are guys that can single-handedly still be league winners. Yeah. I mean, you can't trade away league winners for round one picks. Now the counter argument to that is Cooper Kupp was a league winner a couple years ago, and now he's got back-to-back years of injuries, and you know his value is extremely deflated. And had you traded him away for, you know, one round one pick at the time of his career season, you would have been wrong. But 6 months later, you would have been right. And so can you live with taking a little bit less value in order to get out before the bottom sinks? Or do you want to, you know, have a high probability of getting, you know, league leading type fantasy points and you can stomach the fall off the following year? That's a question that every player has to answer for, you know, himself or herself. And AJ Brown, I mean, he's still, I know that he faded down the stretch, but I mean, he's still tied to Jalen Hurts, and he had a phenomenal year. If you zoom out and look at, you know, the whole 17 games, team just wrapped him up for, you know, foreseeable future along with Devontae Smith. So,
yeah, he was the wide receiver eight in PPR per game, was a wide receiver one 41% of games. I think almost kind of what happened to him was the ending of the season prior to last was so strong that it created these kind of unrealistic expectations, right? People wanted to extrapolate what he was doing there across an entire 16 games, and I don't really think that was realistic.
Yeah. And now can you remind me his stats last year versus his first year in Philly? And weren't they essentially the same?
Yeah, so if we pop into the career detail tab of the NFL Player Stat Explorer, what we can see is in 2022, that was his first year, correct? 2022. So you got 17 games in 22, yeah. 17 games in 23. From an expected points perspective, he actually saw 30 more expected points in 23. And if we start to drill into some of the receiving numbers, he had 40. So he had, this is kind of interesting, Curtis. 2022, he had 88 receptions for 1,496 yards. But in 23, 106 receptions for 1,456 yards. So that's actually, you know, for the decrease that you got in yards, but the increase in receptions, that's actually an improvement. Went from 144 targets to 157. Now, in 2022, he did put up 11 receiving touchdowns, had only 7 last year, which I think probably impacts things a little bit. And because of the touchdown scoring, he put up 2.1 PPR per opportunity in 2022, was a little bit more efficient versus his 1.9 PPR per opportunity.
Still great numbers.
Still great numbers. And I think kind of to your point, overall, things are pretty similar. You know, had an increase of 1% in target market share. His Whopper was basically flat, Racer more or less flat between the years. So some of this is just kind of the way that things fell out through the season, shaping the perception, I think.
Yeah, I mean, A.J. Brown, what is he, 27? He's 26. He's going to be 27 in June. So, I mean, he's entering his wide receiver prime. I mean, so I think the player that I haven't talked about yet is Waddle.
Yeah, he's super interesting. We know that I've always loved Waddle.
I want to zoom in here.
And I actually had to think about it. Yep.
Let's zoom in because the big question is, have we seen anything from Waddle that makes us think that if Tyreek Hill really does retire after 2025, when Waddle's entering those prime years, can he take that leap to Tyreek's level of production? Or is this another situation where we have a T. Higgins type player who's a very strong number two? Mm-hmm. That's going to give us 1,000 to 1,100 yards and 6 to 8 touchdowns, but you can find that so many places. I mean, you can find that or close to it so many places for so much cheaper. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what can you, he's the one. It's like, I'm locked in, man. AJ Brown's tier two, McCaffrey's tier two for me. Tyreek Hill's tier two for me. Waddle is the above or below line, but you know, in this exercise, the way that we've set it up. So talk to me about Jalen Waddle over the last 2 years. We've got to dig into this. Well,
so actually, Curtis, kind of the wild thing that I needed to share first is 2023 in comparison to his rookie year and his second year, actually a pretty substantial step back, right? Yeah. In 2021, he finished as number 14 in PPR per game, number 13 in expected points per game. Wasn't even that efficient. It was 64 in fantasy points over expectation per game. In 2022, finishes as number 13 in PPR per game, number 38 in expected points per game, but then was super efficient, was actually third in overall efficiency in terms of FPOE per game. We moved to 2023, and his expected points per game land at 23. His efficiency is at number 40 in fantasy points over expectations per game, but his PPR per game falls to wide receiver 22. Another really kind of interesting thing, Curtis, is if you look at his weeks as a wide receiver one last year, he only had 2 weeks in which he was a wide receiver one. You contrast that with 2022, where he had 6 weeks as a wide receiver one. And then even back in his first year, he had 4 weeks as a wide receiver one. One really interesting thing about Waddle, when you look at his numbers, that I do think is kind of keeping him down and preventing him from making an ascension to that next level of wide receiver, is he has a lot of games where he is just not showing up, right? So you have a decent section of wide receiver one games across his career, decent section of wide receiver two, but there are much more wide receiver 3 weeks with just like 4 or 6 points than you would expect to see for a wide receiver in this conversation. Now, I do think when you take an overall look at those numbers, there's still a good story there. Just you still have that lingering question of, is some of this because he's playing with Tyreek Hill and it's so easy for a team to shift points to Tyreek Hill because he's scoring points like very few wide receivers can. I'm of the opinion that if Tyreek Hill is removed from this situation, you see Jaylen Waddle moving from being a type of player that you're locking in the wide receiver two conversation in redraft year to being more on the fringe of being a wide receiver one. But I don't think that you're going to see him, even without Tyreek Hill in that offense, make the jump where you start thinking about him in the top tier of wide receivers. I really liked him coming to college. I didn't think that he profiled as that type of player, though. One of the things that I liked was he looked like a wide receiver that was NFL ready, going to be a consistent wide receiver two type of player across the years. And I don't think that we've seen things that are really going to sway me off of that. So though he might be a fringe wide receiver one for redraft purposes, I don't see him making the ascension to the next step.
Yeah, I'm trying to adjust for him only playing 14 games last year. Because if you just look at the overall counting stats, I mean, the 72 receptions, the 1,014 yards and the 4 touchdowns, you just look at the counting stats. I mean, he had worse numbers than Adam Thielen last year. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he had worse numbers than Chris Godwin last year. I mean, these are players that are valued far, far below Waddle, albeit slightly different points of their career too. But even, you know, Terry McLaurin had, you know, essentially those numbers. Calvin Ridley had better numbers than that. You know, and so it's just, DeAndre Hopkins had better numbers than that last year. And so, you know, that's where it gets tricky. But if you give him credit, you know, for the production and the games that he missed, he wouldn't have been far off of, say, what Jamar Chase did in 16 games.
Yeah.
And we talk way different about Jamar Chase, you know, and I mean, now Jamar Chase had a down year in some respects because he didn't have Joe Burrow the whole season. So if you want to throw that out, you know, could he have gotten to the Nico Collins level? I think he could have. I mean, he was within 7 receptions of that, within about 200 yards of that, the touchdown, you know, I'm not sure he would have scored 4 more touchdowns in 3 more games, but Nico Collins, you know, put up, you know, just slightly better numbers, albeit in only 2 more games, not 4 more games, then they keep searching higher. Like, okay, could he have done Brandon Ayuk numbers? Well, maybe, but do you feel great about, you know, is Ayuk a slam dunk dynasty wide receiver one? No, he's like a contingency play. If you miss out on all the other guys as a dynasty, you know, wide receiver one, he's a fringe wide receiver one in his own regard. So yeah, I think we almost have to go through the exercise of removing Tyreek Hill from that offense to figure out what we think about Waddle. And I think, you know, right now, I'm just not sure with the way that run game is constructed, with the way that they continue to draft other players with similar skill sets to mix into that offense. I mean, they added another similar wide receiver this year. And then, you know, they added Jonnu Smith. They're trying to get more athletic at tight end. How much bigger could his role get? I mean, with as dynamic as the run game is now, I don't know if we get back to the way that he was used his rookie season, where he had, you know, a more of a material impact on the offense. So I tend to think we should value him more like a T. Higgins, and that he just hasn't received that discount yet in our heads, where everyone kind of has made that adjustment on Higgins. So I'm going to keep him down. I'm going to keep him down in tier 3 here. Where are you going to keep him?
So an interesting thing though, right? I did have to do our favorite thing and hop into the game splits app. So from 2022 on, we only have 1 out-of-split game. So obviously we've got to take this with a grain of salt.
Huge sample size.
He did put up 28.2 PPR in that game on 8 receptions, a touchdown, 142 yards, contrasted with games in which Hill played. He was at just 14 PPR, just 4 receptions, 74 yards, and 0.37 touchdowns. Now, if you do include his rookie year, he's averaged around two more PPR per game when Hill is removed, and that comes off of a line that looks something like 6.5 receptions, touchdown in 40% of games, around 9 targets and 68 yards. So, you know, unfortunately, we don't have too much to really inform us there. It pains me to say it, but honestly, I think that Waddle is kind of slipping out of tier two.
Okay. And I mean, we reserve the right to put him back up in tier two. It's not, I mean, it just means that in a startup, we're not trading up to get him if he's the last player kind of in that area. Right. But I mean, we'd be happy to trade down into an area if he's, you know, maybe if we're in the latter half of tier two and we can get two early tier three picks and he's kind of a borderline guy. I mean, maybe we could talk ourselves into something like that.
Can I ask one question? I know we got to keep moving, but let me ask you this question on Waddle.
I want to get to tier three, tier four, but yeah, let's keep going.
You're assembling a dynasty team, right? And Jalen Waddle is your wide receiver two. How are you feeling about that team?
Jalen Waddle was a wide receiver two on my Triflex team.
I mean, I think if you're not feeling that great, the fact that you even have to think about this makes me think that maybe tier three is the right spot for him.
Well, I mean, I've got him rated. I've got him rated as a wide receiver two in my own rankings here. I'm just going through and counting how far down he's pretty far down.
Well, at the very least, I think it speaks to the kind of new outlook on him as we head into 2024.
I've got him as a mid two. And okay. I mean, so once you get into the mid to late of any, you know, kind of 12 man grouping, when you start talking about wide receiver ones and twos, which is totally arbitrary. But anytime you start getting into the mid to the latter half of that, those are the guys that you're less like, if I say, hey, how would you feel if, you know, how would you feel like if Tyreek Hill was your wide receiver too? Well, you'd be really excited because he's my top rated wide receiver too. Right. Yeah. But okay, well, what about your bottom rated wide receiver too? Roma Dunze or T Higgins is your wide receiver too. How do you feel? Well, I got him as a wide receiver too, but he's like 23, 24 or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say show me the rest of that team. You know, I probably got stuck drafting Waddle, and you know, it is what it is. Show me the rest of the team. Yeah, he's not, I don't think he's a building block, and that alone tells me that that alone tells me that, you know, tier three, which is a future one plus a future round two. I mean, if you're going to talk about a guy that's going to be 70, 80 receptions, 1,000 yards and 4 to 6 touchdowns, I mean, that's a good haul for that player because you can arrive at that production, you know, a lot of different ways. We actually need him to be above where he's at in production to justify demanding two future ones. I think a lot of dynasty managers would trade Waddle for two future ones right now. I think that would be a deal that gets accepted half of the time, which is, you know, means it's right. Okay. So the tier three, tier four break here, this is going to get even more difficult, Dave. So I hope you're ready. Okay. That the bottom of tier three, we have Brian Thomas, TJ Hockenson and Deebo Samuel. So three wildly different players here. And then the top of tier four, we have Mark Andrews, Devontae Smith and Kyren Williams. Okay. And so again, tier three is a future one and a two. Tier four is just straight up for a future one. So again, those players are Brian Thomas. So he's already accrued value, right? You spent a first on him. Now you're saying you would want a future second in addition to that first that you spent to justify trading him away. Brian Thomas, TJ Hockenson and Deebo Samuel. And then the tier break would then be at Mark Andrews, Devontae Smith, Kyren Williams. So I will read down through those. You tell me if there's a break in there for you.
Well, the problem I think is that we have a break at the first name and the first name needs a move.
But let's just go through it. We talked about Brian Thomas last episode, right? So Brian Thomas, you stop me when I need to. Brian Thomas, TJ Hockenson, Deebo Samuel, Devontae Smith, Mark Andrews, Kyron Williams?
I think we're stopping at Mark Andrews. And
above or below?
I think I put Mark. So here's the thing that's kind of confounding to me is Hawkinson being in a tier above Andrews. I think I would rather have Andrews in tier three than Hawkinson in tier four. I think I would.
Okay, so this is a shakeup.
I would shake that up. I would make that swap there. As I am looking at the other names on the list, I get Thomas moving into round three, given that I do think he has already accrued value. I think Debo in tier three makes sense. I can have a conversation with myself about Smith, maybe Kyron Williams. The reason, though, that I would move Kyron Williams out of there is, as great as last year was, I still have concerns about us looking forward 1 or 2 years and him holding the value that he has. I don't expect that in the majority of outcomes he will. So as a result of that, you know, I slate him back into tier four. I'm not sure if we're going to need to kind of zoom in on Smith a little bit, but let's see kind of your reaction to that.
Here's why I think we need to zoom into Smith, because does he belong in tier three or tier four? Because I'm going to be honest. What's the difference between Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle?
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
I mean, can we look at Smith a little closer? Because I mean, if we're pushing Waddle down to three, I think Smith's got to be pushed up to three. And I mean,
I agree. As I start looking at this,
a similar role to, you know, I mean,
yep. So the quick and dirty here, right, is, and I hate that phrase, but I've worked with a couple of people who say it all the time, and now it's just stuck in my head, so we have to live with it. He has had each year, he's gone pretty much stride for stride, if not better, than Waddle in wide receiver 1 weeks. Was a wide receiver one 25% of games last year, wide receiver two in 31. That gave him four wide receiver 1 weeks, had four games with over 20 points. If you drill in a little bit more, you'll see he was number 23 in targets, number 20 in PPR per game, 34 in expected points per game, was efficient last year with 15, a rank of 15 in FPOE per game. And actually across his career, he's had two fairly efficient seasons. Maybe next year will be a down year. But if you drill into his career detail as well, he's been pretty consistent. So we saw him last season go 113 targets. The year prior, he was at 136. He was at 104 as a rookie. He's averaged more around like 9 yards per reception on his career, with around like 6.6 receiving touchdowns, a market share that has been somewhere around 23-24%. In terms of total yards, he's been around 1,000 yards each season. Receptions have been somewhere around 80. So this is a fairly similar player to Jalen Waddle. You know, the numbers don't exactly line up, but I think if Waddle's in tier three, you consider the overall situation these players are in, then I think that Smith does belong in tier three as well after that kind of quick analysis. But that's kind of when we were reading down the names, it felt to me, my reaction was that he'd have to get shifted up as well. So I think that kind of jives with my expectation.
Yeah. As I kind of observe this edge, and of course the further down you get into the rankings, the more variation you're going to have. I mean, because, you know, every single player that we differ on early is just going to create, you know, it creates a gap somewhere else. And then you start stacking those gaps, and all of a sudden you have 20 player gaps between some of these players once you're 50, 60, 70 players deep into a draft. And I mean, what kind of speaks to me here is there a material difference in any of these players? Like, I mean, a future second in Dynasty is kind of, it's like the sweetener to get a deal done when the other guy doesn't, you know, it's like, these players are the same, but I don't really feel like I should make this deal. All right, well, I'll give you a future second. Oh, okay. I'll do it. I mean, it's not, your team's in a vacuum, a single deal, a future second isn't making or breaking your squad. And it's not a sign of clear conviction when observing or evaluating a rating between, you know, two specific players or even a group of players like this. And so I think that 2-3 debate was much more important when we're talking about the difference of that extra first.
Yeah.
But I think I'm in the same spot you are. To zoom in a little bit more on Kyren Williams, I think them, you know, taking Corum is a little bit of signal that, you know, they'd like to lighten the load. I mean, Corum's not a guy to bring onto your team to take a couple touches a game. And I mean, I think they've got actually kind of similar skill sets when you look at a Williams and Corum. I've got Williams the lowest on our team, maybe a little bit too low. I might bump him up as a result of seeing, you know, that Sean and Blair still have him as kind of a fifth to sixth round borderline pick. I've got him at the 6-7 borderline for startups, and that might be a little bit too low, but basically I moved him below a lot of the rookies is what happened. And
which I honestly think that makes sense to me. It kind of makes sense, right? That you
I moved him below Jonathan Brooks.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, that's and so that pushes him down there. But we're not going to do the tier four, tier five, because once you start getting to that, it's like, what's the difference between players with round two and you know, or two round twos and a round two and a round three? I mean, these are guides at that point. I think getting the first 60 to 70 players of a dynasty ranking set, of a dynasty startup, of a dynasty tier set, those are very important players to create some conviction around, because I mean, that's going to be the foundation of your dynasty roster. And so it's going to inform all the trades that you try, you know, that you're willing to make. Am I willing to trade out of rounds 3, 4, and 5 like I did in my recent startup and accrue a bunch of picks in round 7 and 8 because I didn't think there was that much of a difference between the players at the top and the bottom of the tier? I mean, that's literally the whole point of having it laid out this way. So, you know, hopefully it's interesting to you to hear Dave and I go through this. I'm going to make a couple of tweaks just based off of our conversations. I enjoyed hearing which players Dave stressed out a little bit more about than what I did. And it's just a reminder that every player means something different to every dynasty manager. And that's why the game is so fun. So thanks for helping us zoom in the NFL Stat Explorer and other tools in this episode, Dave. And maybe we'll come back and revisit this another time this summer as things take shape a little bit more, player roles become more clear, and we gain even more conviction about what we think that we think about the 2024 season.
Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Fantasy Football Show. Send us questions at rvffshow@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at DaveCabinFF and at CPatrickNFL. Leave us a voicemail at 978-615-9214. And make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.